Hello and welcome to Witchy Wellness Radio. I'm your host, Lauren Chalantani, women's holistic health coach and fellow recovering perfectionist. This podcast was created to show you that your body is not in the way. It is actually leading your way. You are listening to episode 124, The Portal of Meditation with Tom Cronin. Are you curious about what doTERRA oils could do for you? Or maybe want a refresh on bottles you already own? Well, my community has created weekly essential oil classes every Monday online at 2 p.m. or 8 p.m. Eastern. Use the link in the show notes to sign up and you'll receive an email with class details, Zoom information, and a notes package. I hope to see you there. And now, without further ado, episode 124, The Portal of Meditation with Tom Cronin. Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back to Witchy Wellness Radio. This is a show you learn how your body is not in the way, but actually leading the way. And our wonderful guest today, Tom Cronin, is here to talk about overcoming anxiety, chaos, and trauma in your life and business today. So definitely teaching us how our bodies and emotions are leading the way. A little bit more about Tom before we jump in. He spent 26 years as one of Sydney's top bond and swap brokers. From early on in his career, he found meditation and mindfulness to be transformational in relieving the chaos and anxiety that he experienced in his life and in work. Inspired by his own experiences, he then founded the Stillness Project in 2013, a global initiative encouraging individuals to meditate and sit in stillness daily. Since then, he has dedicated himself to changing the lives of countless individuals through teaching transformational leadership, meditation retreats, keynote talks, and most recently, the Portal film experience. The Portal is an experiential documentary created as a part of a bold global vision to overcome the chronic levels of anxiety, depression, PTSD, and trauma faced by most people, probably every people right now. Tom's message is in the film and his many previous podcast appearances is engaging, thought-provoking, and actionable, touching on all aspects of our professional, romantic, and social lives. That is quite the intro. I can't wait to dive into all of this. But welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks for inviting me along. So such an extensive bio, isn't it?
I know. Sometimes you hear somebody else read your bio, you're like, oh, yes, that I did do that. Oh, yeah, that is
me. I forgot that. I just live in an hour. I forgot all that happened.
yeah, that's more important. Exactly. And I would love, we got a little bit of a synopsis, right, of what your hero's journey was like, but I would love to hear in your words, how did you get to doing the work today, to producing, creating this beautiful documentary, The Portal? I only read a few sentences about your transformational journey, but I know there's so much more transformation that went along with that.
Yeah, you know, I like to break it down into three sections, which really is three sections that most people really ultimately go through in their lives at some point, and that's seeker, finder, sharer. And when we are in a dark room, the one thing we go clamoring around looking for when we walk into a dark room is a light switch. You know, we're in the dark and we're looking for something to illuminate the darkness. And that's the first stage in the process, which is the seeker, seeking. And that's what humanity's in right now. We're in the darkness and we're seeking. And we're seeking it in Netflix, in Instagram, we're seeking it in ice cream, we're seeking in gambling, in drugs and drinking, whatever. But we generally seek and seek and seek to find fulfillment, to find truth, to find some way of finding pleasure and what life's all about. And that's what I did for many years. You know, as a broker, I went into finance on a massive trading room floor like Wolf of Wall Street. And, you know, it was huge amounts of money, huge amounts of adrenaline, huge amounts of drugs, drinking, partying. It was just like very Wolf of Wall Street type of living in the late 80s, early 90s. And then what ensued from that, because I was looking for the fulfillment, for the light, for truth in the wrong area, you just actually get more darkness. and you can't actually find, oh my gosh, this is what life's all about. It's supposed to be in a bottle of vodka or a line of Coke or, you know, and making more money. So it's not going to come from that. And that's what humanity's kind of exhausting in that research at the moment. And then I went into a very dark period of time in my life, you know, a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression, a lot of questioning, a lot of questioning whether I even wanted to live. You know, I was a very, I just would get these waves of panic attacks and this deep, dark depression, but continue on doing what I was doing as a broker on a trading room floor. And eventually it culminated in 1996 into quite a severe nervous breakdown where I couldn't go to work. I was at home. I was incapacitated, experiencing what's called agoraphobia. That's where the idea of even leaving the house is just too overwhelming for the nervous system. And it's very primal. We just stay in the safe space back in the cave because going outside the cave was too much. And it was this incredible divine intervention, I guess, where I was watching TV and a story about a very successful property developer back then who was well known in Australia was talking about his success as a property developer building massive high-rise buildings. And there was a tiny segment of that story where he talked about how he used meditation as a tool for his success to help him with the stress. Now, this was back in 1996. So this was before internet, before apps, before, you know, online meditation programs. And no one in my world meditated. I didn't know anyone that meditated. You know, I was brought up as a Catholic boy on a farm and I worked in the finance industry, you know, so it was a very alien, you know, concept to sit in a chair meditating. And this guy literally was in a suit in a chair meditating. He was doing a technique called transcendental meditation. And he used that word, and I'd never heard it before. And this idea of transcending, you know, for many years, I really enjoyed the sort of the rave nightclub sort of culture and that idea of, you know, transcending into sort of a sense of losing control. But when he talked about it in this perspective of meditation, it really triggered something for me. It was just like this activation of incredible leaning in to my goodness. And so what happened then was I actually recalled so clearly picking up, this was going back, gosh, now 25 years ago. I remember picking up the Yellow Pages book that was in our house. You know, we used to use the Yellow Pages. No one had Google, right? And so I used the Yellow Pages to, and I looked up M for meditation. And there in, because all the other different businesses under M for meditation were in black. You know, in the Yellow Pages, you could have black print. But every now and then, if you want to pay a premium, you could get yours in red, right? And this one came up in red, Transcendental Meditation, and it had different centers around the city. And I just distinctly remember picking up the phone and calling the center and starting to inquire into meditation. And that really was the turning point in my life. It was the starting point of me exploring Eastern philosophy, meditation, the mind, stress. And I even remember that you couldn't actually just sign up and learn to meditate. You had to go to an intro talk. And in that intro talk, everything he was saying was like, light bulb moment after light bulb moment after light bulb moment. It's like everything. And I remember driving home going, this is exactly what I've been looking for all my life. And so that was it.
Beautiful.
There's a lot more after that, 25 more years after that, but that's, we'll just leave it there.
That's enough. Yeah. A little longer of a summary. Yeah. That's why our tagline is your body is not in the way. Life's not in the way. Your emotions aren't in the way. It's leading the way. They're all divine moments trying to awaken you to that maybe negative seeking behavior, whatever patterns going on in your life. And you mentioned, you know, that very primal nervous system overload with agoraphobia. And really, for me, it's so interesting. Every time for me, when I go to meditate or I'm working on, you know, maybe overcoming something in my life or set of beliefs, I find like pride, like we are overcoming years and millennia of, you know, our nervous system going on the fritz. We are overcoming these hardwired fear programs to, you know, to tap into maybe a deeper state of consciousness or live to our fullest potential. And I love the tagline you have is changing the world one mind at a time. I would love to talk about what does that mean? And how does our nervous system tie into all of this to help us really live our fullest potential?
You know, I mentioned earlier, but the seeker, then the finder, then the sharer. So as a seeker, I started to find by default, you know, eventually you find the light. And for me, it was through meditation. And then the next step in that process is like, I just couldn't believe what was happening to me. You know, I went from having chronic addictions, chronically stressed, insomnia, panic attacks, depression, as you know. And then when I started to meditate and put my mind into that state of deep calm and stillness, my nervous system then related to that and transitioned out of that hyperstimulated sympathetic nervous system state into the parasympathetic nervous system state. It changed and regulated my biochemistry. It changed my digestion. It changed my brain functionality, changed my physiology. And lo and behold, within literally just weeks, all of those anomalies went away. No drugs, no therapy, no doctors. And I just couldn't believe that this wasn't something that everyone was doing. And I kind of became a bit, probably quite annoying to my colleagues, friends and family. But I kind of did get a little bit soapboxy because it's just like, hey guys, did you know, like, this is crazy. This there's this thing here, right? It's 10,000 years old and it literally will change your life. And so it just blew me away that we weren't, you know, embracing this as a method for treating people with stress and trauma and anxiety and depression. And so I got quite passionate about bringing meditation to the world. And what I realized was that no matter how much I do with books and film or whatever, it really comes down to one individual at a time, shifting their mindset, shifting their mind out of the dogma, out of the program, out of their conditioning, changing their mind into a deep calm state, then translating that into their body going into a deep calm state, and then everything starting to change from there. It was just phenomenal. And the ripple effect of that is absolutely incredible.
I totally agree. I get soapboxy sometimes too about this kind of stuff. I started this whole podcast because of it. You know, it's like you learn these things and go through your own transformation in your life, but it's just it feels like such common sense once you do it. You're like, why? Everybody needs to be able to do this. You know, we don't have to live in this state of chronic anxiety or depression or that negative seeking behavior, PTSD. You know, there's another way. And for me, when I started this journey, it was more so I knew what I didn't want to feel. You know, I had very chronic anxiety, digestion issues, migraines, all this stuff. But I also didn't know like what I wanted to create in any area of my life either. So can we talk about, you know, consciously creating and how that consciously creating is what we truly desire into our own lives. How's that process work? We calm our nervous system down, our body down. We can re-regulate our whole bodies and so many other things, but how can that translate into consciously creating what we do want in our lives?
Yeah. I love what you're saying there, consciously creating, because everyone's manifesting all the time. People go, oh, can you teach me to manifest? It's like you're manifesting. You manifest the hairstyle, the clothes you're wearing, the partner you're living with, the house you're living in. So we're manifesting, but we're unconsciously manifesting. And what you're saying here is where we become proactive in that. And the hard part is we don't know what we don't know. So we, you know, it's a twofold process. One is that using the mind and one is using the nervous system or the feeling body, and that they have to work together to basically manifest consciously what you want to create in your life. And I want you to think of your mind and your feeling body as a sort of almost like a Wi-Fi modem that's sending out the signal to the universe to set in motion a series of events and orchestrate physical form. So physical form is very dense, it's very heavy, and it's very slow to move. So what tends to happen when we come down to consciously creating is that we might start with an idea about, let's just say I want to write a book. For me, it was, let's just make a film. And then there's a series of steps that you have to go through. And I use the analogy with my clients that it's like building a house. The first, you have to go and have the intention to build the house. That's the first step in the process. I have an intention to build a house. Then you have to go to an architect and you have to design the house. So you have to actually get a two-dimensional, sometimes these days, three-dimensional image of what it is that you're going to create before you create it. You have to know what it is. But then before it goes from the architect to the actual construction process, which is the physical manifestation, it has to pass the engineers. And the architect's plans will go to the engineers, and the engineers will go, I don't know if this stacks up, because there's a few things here that aren't quite working out. You might need to go back to the design, because this beam here is not going to be supportive enough, or this engineering component's not going to be strong enough. And what happens here in this section between the actual intention and the desire and the design to the actual manifestation of it is having to pass the engineer's test. And so an example there would be, I have this intention to go and live on this farm in a particular place in Australia called Byron Bay, and I really want to live there. Like, it's the designs there. I know what it looks like. I know what it's going to be. I know where it's going to, the location and everything. And before it can manifest, what's blocking its manifestation is that there's a slight competing preference that's out-competing the preference to actually be there right now. And that's that I've got two children in the city that are just kind of finishing teenage years and still I like being with them. My mum and dad aren't that well, so I need to be quite close to them. So there's a barrier there that's not passing the engineer's test that's just superseding that intention and desire. And quite often we don't realize that there's something subtle but slightly stronger that's out-competing our preference. And it could be a number of things. It could be self-sabotage. It could be unworthiness. It could be, you know, I had one client, she wanted to become a diplomat for her country and work around the world as an ambassador. But she couldn't understand why she wasn't manifesting this. I said, well, let's look at what your deepest, deepest desires are. And what we found was because it was so deep and so familiar, she didn't realize it was there. And that was that she was in the Philippines and she had this strong, strong family obligation and responsibility. And being a diplomat meant that she would have to break free of that and go and travel around the world and leave her mother and father and her family, which she didn't realize was out-competing that preference. And so therefore it was blocking her ability to manifest.
That's so cool. I love how you approach that, because a lot of people approach it as, well, what false belief do I have that I'm holding on to? Like you said, unworthiness, but the competing, that's the really cool way to look
competing
at it.
Competing preferences.
Yeah, competing preferences. And that kind of transitions to, you know, we consciously or unconsciously create a reality. But as a whole, humanity, we are co-creators of this kind of reality that we live in now. What's your take on, you know, co-creating the world that we live in today?
The world that we've manifested and living in right now is an extension of the state of consciousness and the mind that we're in collectively as a society. There's two different ways of using languaging around this. In the old Vedic sort of philosophy, we use Kali Yuga and Sat Yuga, Kali Yuga being the age of ignorance, which is ignoring our essential, fundamental, absolute nature of our divine self. And Satyuga is when majority of people, if not all the people, have awakened to that and have realized that nature. And then when they create and manifest from that state of interconnectedness of divine self, then they create and manifest very different things, very different business models, political systems, banking systems, financial systems. These days, there's a new terminology that's starting to emerge called Game A and Game B. Now, Game A is a finite win-lose paradigm that is self-terminating. So if we continue to play Game A like we're playing, which is extract and use as much as we possibly can for our own personal gain, because when you operate from an egoic identity, whether that's individually or collectively or in a business or a country, you can only do what you're doing for your own individual needs, regardless of the consequences of the implications of that on someone or something else, because my needs supersede everyone else's. That's just the way that ego works. And that can be in business, countries, sporting teams, or individuals. My needs supersede everyone else's, and I need to have my needs met. It doesn't mean we can't be kind and compassionate with an ego. It's just that primary sort of driving incentive is always coming from an egoic sort of presence. In an awakened human being that has less ego, if not no ego, what happens is they don't even think that way. It's just not possible. And so in a world that we're transitioning into, it's very, very early stages. And we talk a lot about this in the film, where the caterpillar morphs into the butterfly. It's a very gradual process that goes through a series of events and sequences. There's a tipping point called the chrysalis moment. Now, before the tipping point, that caterpillar most likely will die as a caterpillar. And it won't do the transformation. It won't have the alchemy. And it won't morph into something that isn't a net consumer, but actually is a contributor, where it propagates the plants and grows the forest. So we're not at that point of passing through the chrysalis yet as a species. We're still in that self-termination phase, which is probably a high likelihood that we don't evolve fast enough to transition out of the self-terminating game that we're currently in. But what we're seeing is this quite an exponential level of awakening, podcasts like this alone. The fact that we're having this conversation 15 years ago, we couldn't have this conversation because podcasts didn't exist. So this ability to share this information and people to embrace the tools and techniques that allow us to move and transition into Game B or Satyuga is happening so quickly. that there's a possibility that we can get through the chrysalis moment, which is really exciting.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I love that visualization. And for me, it's powerful to know that, yes, I'm overcoming and living my fullest potential, but by me doing this in consciousness, but also in 3D, this reality, it has a ripple effect, right? And I think we see this, it's almost expedited right now, like you said, of more and more people waking up to all of this, which is beautiful. And it gets me really excited too, because, you know, 15 years ago, even 10 years ago, these things weren't as big, and here we are talking all about it. I love going into the unknown and chatting consciousness.
What really expands accentuates this rapid proliferation of consciousness is the magnification of one individual mind through the platforms that we've now developed, which is podcasts. So one person can go through a transformation, or a film, or an app, or a blog. So one person can go through a shift in consciousness and then start to share what they found as a seeker, but share it through such mediums that it can spread across the planet so quickly, you know. And so this is the incredibly exciting exponential level of progress that we're going to see as consciousness ripples like wildfire across the planet.
Woohoo! Yeah, I'm excited. And I want to dive into your movie documentary experience, The Portal, because that's one of those driving factors that worldwide that, you know, is inspiring and transforming people's lives. What made you inspired you to create this movie?
It's a movie and a book. So yeah. It was actually, I would have to be, you know, really transparent. It was inspired partly by The Secret.
Yeah.
Because The Secret managed to, when I watched The Secret, I was like, it really got me giddy and excited, because what they did was the success of The Secret, what they managed to do was infiltrate the masses with a very esoteric idea, the law of attraction. It was very unheard of. You know, we had Napoleon Hill's book, which no one really knew about, but they managed to mainstream a very esoteric subject and put it into the households of the world, get omnipresent. So you can go to pretty much any country and go, have you heard of The Secret film or book? And most people will say yes. And so I really got inspired by that to do that with meditation. I wanted to use storytelling through film and book as a medium to showcase the power of meditation against crisis and how meditation can help us transition out of crisis. So we researched 300 stories, real life stories, and narrowed them down to six individual stories. We were looking for themes that were individual crises that related to a potential global crisis. So that's human displacement, war, it could be, economic collapse, all sorts of things that would overlay against a global theme. And so we've got these six individual stories that have gone through their own personal crisis, transitioned out of that crisis using meditation. And then we look at humanity through the eyes of three futurists and what, where we are, where we've been, and where we might be going in the future.
Beautiful. And what transition or, you know, what pearls of wisdom do you offer for people, you know, reading the book or watching documentary? You know, I've watched so many inspiring documentaries, including The Secret, and it's like, yeah, I want to get started today. What can people kind of expect? I guess it also leads to what programs and coaching and offers that you have through your own and also the Stillness Project. If people are watched it or going to watch it and want to learn more and want to move through that sinking stage, what does this have to offer?
Good question. the whole point of the film and the book was not actually to just watch the film and the book and then walk away. It's we call it inspiration, which is that the inspired action as a result of what they saw. So what we want them to do is watch the film and the book, and then hopefully from that feel compelled or inspired to go, my goodness, I really need to meditate. And so from there, they can go anywhere in the world to look for ways to learn to meditate. But if they want to, explore particular programs that we have, you know, we share with them some ideas that they might be able to start learning to meditate. And we've got a program called Deep Meditation, which helps people learn how to meditate deeply, which is getting some great feedback from people that are using that program. We've got an app. And then, of course, I run weekend workshops, I run retreats, and I run coaching programs for conscious leadership as well.
Beautiful. Yeah. For me, meditation, but also breath work has been very transformational as well. In your own experience and your programs and teaching and coaching, do you also teach breath work practices along with the deep meditation?
In the actual online program, there's just the meditation.
Okay.
Certainly with my students and on retreats and things, we add a pranayama practice to it, which is breath work. So we really see the importance. Sometimes it can be a little bit too much if you just suddenly hit someone up with a whole lot of stuff. So we just kind of like edge them in gently. But breath work is such an important part. And if you look at the ancient traditions, there was always yoga, breath work, and meditation or stillness. And the combination of those three, which is what we compile together in our retreat, is this sequence that incorporates some gentle yoga, some breath work, and then the stillness. And particularly the breath work and the stillness go together so well.
It took me a while to get into breath work as well. But for me, it helps me deepen my meditation practice because I think it stresses out, but then it calms my nervous system deeper than I could by not using breath work. And I dabbled a little bit in, the more trendy breath work these days is Wim Hof method. And, there's free meditation and breath work YouTubes you can listen to, but breath retention, I had no idea how challenging that was going to be after being a very experienced meditator as well. It cues up that fight or flight response, sympathetic nervous system right away. But for me, I didn't realize how I'm a yogi as well, how tied my breath was to regulating my nervous system. And when you have to hold your breath like that, I realized, this is a new and different way for me to learn how to go deeper. And for me, it was tuning in almost to myself, and that was able to kind of expand deeper almost into the cosmos or into my consciousness. It was a little bit of a rant there. I love the combination of meditation and breath work. It's very, very, very powerful. But I wanted to transition. I know a lot of people here might be stressed out the past almost 2 years at this point, might be feeling worn down. But how can this apply to other areas of life, like your career, your relationships? I mean, obviously your health. The sky's the limit, but what kind of different experiences, or just like in your documentary, different worldviews can this affect?
There's so many layers there, what you're talking about. Firstly, we'll start with relationships. When we're calm and out of the sympathetic and into the parasympathetic nervous system, our biochemistry changes. When we're stressed and having an overwhelmed state, we can't produce oxytocin. Now, oxytocin is a biochemical that's required to experience sensations of love. So no matter how good your relationship is, if you're not feeling love because your body's not producing it, you're only producing cortisol, it's going to have a very detrimental effect on your relationship. And so we have a lot of people in struggling relationships simply because there's too much stress in the system. When it comes to creativity and your career, my career went through the roof when I started meditating because I became much more efficient, more effective, less stressed, and my brain's functionality was optimizing day after day. It was just reaching greater and greater capacity to get more out of my brain's capabilities. When we're stressed, we get very limited function out of our brain. And this is the conundrum that the world's in right now. When we're stressed, we need to be very creative to find a solution to the problem that's causing the stress. But because we're stressed, we're getting compromised brain functionality. It's operating from very reptilian parts of the brain. And that leads to more stress because we can't find the solutions to the problems. And this, again, keeps us in a very, very mediocre and very substandard way of living. On all areas that it's going to change our life. But as you said, on a macro, when we start seeing a sort of global worldview, there's something that really interesting happens when you start meditating, is that you start to transcend and be able to see through the veneer of a social conditioning. And what happens is you start to... There's kind of like a 4-5-step process where the first thing is you start waking up and you have this capacity to, we call them a seer, S-E-E-R, one that can see. And you start seeing through this sort of lens of what society's kind of established and created. The first thing is you wake up and you see differently. Then you start to ask questions like, that doesn't make sense. I wonder why. And so you start asking questions about certain dogma and constructs of society. The second after waking up and then asking the question, you start to challenge the status quo. So it's like, well, I kind of don't agree with that. I don't think that's really a right thing. It's like Jesus flipping tables in the temple. The first question is, why is that happening? The second thing is, I don't agree with this. I'm going to flip some tables, try and disrupt things a little bit. And then after challenging, you start to see a dismantling and a crumbling collectively of systems that aren't actually serving the benefit and the uplift of humanity as a whole or the planet as a whole. And so then the challenging, we're not quite at that phase yet where the system starts to dismantle and fall apart. And then the reconstruction starts to happen after that. So we've got a few more steps to go.
Beautiful. Yeah, it's the, you know, almost like the goddess Kali, the death and then the rebirth of creation. And beautifully, like how you put it, for me, it's like, that's tapping into that subconscious mind and that curious mind. And instead of, you know, trying to solve the solution with the same level of consciousness that created it, you're opening up to all the possibilities, whether you're working towards a goal or you're questioning something in your life or society. And I don't know if Dr. Joe Dispenza said this, or but I've heard it from him, is that the original quote, you don't see the world how it is, you see the world how you are. And it's exactly what you just talked about, Tom, of when we can tap into these different and higher levels of consciousness, we start to look at and reassess everything in our lives. And for me, the more and more throughout my journey, I got into stuff like this. I even relationships, friendships, I realized friendships started melting away. And I thought, this is weird. I'm becoming happier and a better version of myself, but it's, you almost break these ties consciously or subconsciously for people who can't have, almost not handle, because that seems judgmental, but are not on that same wavelength. Just as you're co-creating your life, sometimes relationships or even jobs that feel like there's this dismantling or this death, but they're opening room for something bigger and better to come into your life that you're more in line with that level of consciousness.
So beautifully put. Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. A shift in vibration and things get out vibrated, or there's an incongruency there. And so things just melt away.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I don't have any other questions. Did you have anything else you wanted to cover before we started to close out the show today?
I guess, you know, no doubt people listening, as you said before, it's a difficult time on the planet, and there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of overwhelm, a lot of fear, possibly a lot of anger, a lot of regret, guilt, shame. These are very low frequency, low emotional frequencies. And one thing that really is going to bring about the greatest shift on the planet is when we liberate ourselves from these low emotional body frequencies and we start to transcend them, and that's to get into the higher frequencies of peace, love, bliss, joy. And these are higher frequencies, you know, out of the 30, 40, 50 hertz, H-E-R-T-Z, tangible, measurable frequencies, we can get up to 500, 600, 700. And that's really what needs to happen here for change to happen. We can go about, you know, placards and protest marches, but ultimately what we want to be in is a state of, you know, equanimity of love, equanimity of peace. And that's within us all. It's not like we can get it in a podcast, or not that there's anything wrong with podcasts, but you know, there's an ongoing quest to find things. And I talked about the seeker, which I was kind of just using some fancy terminology, but ultimately what we're looking for is who we already are, and to strip away the boundaries and the layers of what we sort of perceive ourselves to be, that we can find something outside of ourselves. So this level of inquiry is so critical now to the thing that we've been ignoring. It's actually the thing that's right there within us right now. Enlightenment isn't something we get. It's something we reveal, as opposed from releasing ourselves as the trappings and the bondage of who we think we are. And so know that this is a process, and know that you're divinely blissful and awakened already. It's just a matter of looking within rather than outside of you for that.
I just had a conversation with my best friend a few days ago, exactly what you just said. It's funny we close the show this way, because I'm reading the sequel to The Secret right now, called The Greatest Secret. And that's all she talks about, is who are we really? We are the awareness that is experiencing this life, that the awareness that is experiencing your job or that relationship. And it's not something that's outside of us. It's like you said, the awakening is already here. It's peeling back those layers, almost rediscovering who you really are. So beautifully well put. Thank you, Tom.
Pleasure.
We close out every single show. Thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing and imparting your wisdom, creating your beautiful book and documentary, The Portal. How may we, the listeners, be of service for you as an act of gratitude today in return?
Thank you so much. What a beautiful, offer. Yeah. I think just really to go to the website, entertheportal.com, and you can find the film and the book. There's a number of things. If the film touches you, you can gift it to friends and family. If you want to become a partner with us, you can join us as a partner where we'll share 50% of the revenue of the meditation program and the film with you as a sign of gratitude for, you know, your part in sharing this with the world. So we invite the world to become a partner with us, or to gift the film, or just to watch the film, and that might be enough. Hopefully it touches you. It's a little bit of a different film. Touches some people. Other people are like, oh, it's a bit strange. So it's all good. And if you just want to come and find me on Instagram, you can do that at Tom Cronin and have a chat there.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Tom, for sharing and diving deep into consciousness today with us on the show.
It's a great way to spend my morning. Thanks for inviting me along.
And remember, open up, surrender, trust, and let your body lead the way.